You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. Because it touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, but most of all, entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Brian Colangelo. No, he did! You may know me as the founder of NBA. Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 307. On today's show, we're joined by the wonderful Alex Wolf of Posting and Toasting to discuss a controversial maneuver that the Knicks may want to look into in this year's draft, trading back. We're going to talk about, this is a two-parter. This is part one of two of trade back scenarios. We're going to talk about whether or not it makes sense for the Knicks to consider trading back. Spoiler alert, of course it makes sense for them to consider trading back. We're going to talk about potential trade back partners, and then we're going to talk about potential draft picks in those trade back spots, and like the kind of, not 10, but you know, a little bit beyond 10 to 15, 16 inch range. On today's episode, we're going to talk about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Lonnie Walker. Without any further ado, let's start the show. Hit it, Marv!
Yes!
So I want to start by posing a very simple question with potentially a simple answer. Is it worth seriously investigating trading back in the draft for the Knicks? Is this something that they should look into?
Well, it's a good thing that you needed a simple answer to a simple question because you asked a simple person.
You're just a simple kind of man. Yeah, we finally came together on a reference.
And we did. This is a beautiful way to start. So
the
I don't know.
Immortal,
I
mean, Lynyrd Skynyrd. For those of you guys who want to run out and purchase that track right now, but anyway, continue.
It'll never be as good as that version we just sang.
No,
but
it can't be.
Anyway, I mean, I guess the answer to the question would be, like, if you think that the guys that the Knicks can get at 9 aren't that much better than the guys that they could get at anywhere behind 9, you know, 12, 13, 14, maybe as far back as 16, then it might be worth it. Or if the return you can get offsets that enough. I mean, but that's just kind of the name of any trade in the NBA. So, like, I feel like no matter what, you should always be considering any given trade if you think that you can get a proportionally better return on it than the team that you're trading with. So, like, in the case of the Knicks, the way I've been looking at it is, I mean, as much as I know you really like Mikal Bridges, I really like Mikal Bridges also. But, you know, he's a guy that definitely, I think, if the Knicks drafted him and they had him, I'm sure that at some point when the Knicks became good, he would be a great asset because he definitely profiles as a guy who's going to be an immediate contributor, but also one that maybe has a limited ceiling. But like a different team that's maybe further down and thinks that further down the draft and thinks that they're closer to real life contending might look at a guy like Mikal and say, look, like this is the guy that we need. And he might be the one that puts us into the discussion for like a high level playoff team.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I mean, I think especially like I have started to kind of fall in love with Mikal, but I'm not unreasonable and I do recognize that where the Knicks are right now, it's not absurd to think that someone picked 5-6 picks behind them, you know, could be worth trading down for, especially if, and we'll get into this in a bit, but especially if you get an additional first round draft pick that you expect could be reasonably high either this year or next year. And it's not like I would be very much against even considering it if they had, let's say, a top three or whatever. I think that's historically, obviously, there's a huge drop off from the kind of players you get top three from someone you get in the ninth pick, even though we've talked about a bunch on the show that a bunch of really good players and some Hall of Fame players haven't picked ninth. But overall, it's not as great an area on the draft. And I think in the Knicks case, I am leaning towards not wanting to trade back, depending on what sort of, you know, packages are out there, what could realistically be out there. But I do think the Knicks should perhaps be a little bit more eager than even their draft position would suggest, only because they are at such a talent deficit, and especially when looking at some of the other young teams, not even like the Warriors, forget them, because they're, you know, as dominant as they are now, those guys are all 30 years old, they've got a limited time on that thing. But when you look at a team like Philadelphia, when you look at a team like the Celtics, they have so many good young assets with a couple more in the bank who haven't even been drafted or developed yet. So the Knicks, if they can get an additional player that's around that same sort of draft position, that to me makes it even more valuable than for some other teams.
Yeah. Yeah, I could definitely see that. I mean, and you know, picking out a perfect trade partner is hard too, because there's only really one team that can give you multiple shots in this year's draft, and that's the Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, I don't know. I mean,
well, so let's talk about it. What could the Clippers, for those who are not following the entire draft super closely, what do the Clippers have to offer?
So the Clippers, they have their own pick at 13, and they also have the pick that they acquired in the Blake Griffin trade at 12.
Mm-hmm.
So they pick back to back picks 12 and 13. So 3 and 4 picks back from the Knicks, respectively. That's one of those teams, though, where they were so close to being in the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to, despite trading away their best player last year, they seem to have a fairly decent core there. So that makes you wonder if maybe not necessarily for a guy like McCall, but if someone like Michael Porter or something like that would fall to the Knicks pick that they think could legitimately be like their next star,
they might
consider doing that.
They're trying to win this year, but because they need a reset at some point. Is that what you're saying?
I think it would be kind of a best of both worlds thing, wouldn't it? Like, because, you know, they sort of reset on the fly. They got Tobias Harris, who's still somewhat young.
Mm-hmm.
They got Boban, who's young in NBA years. He doesn't have a lot of NBA minutes on him.
Right.
They still have DeAndre Jordan, who I guess, you know, you can make a decision by next trade deadline. Or DeAndre's a free agent this year, isn't he?
I believe so. I can do a quick Google.
Yeah, you know, I just thought about that. So they might not even have him. So especially if they have reason to believe that he's going to be gone, maybe that would make them even less likely to trade with the Knicks, to be honest.
Well, the only reason I even brought up, I just feel like Michael Porter Jr., I think he could still be an extreme talent, even though there's a lot of warning signs around him, both his injury and I've heard some things about sort of his attitude and work ethic, but he projects to be raw anyway. Like, I don't see him coming out like a Mikal Bridges and sort of contributing a lot right away, especially coming off that injury.
Yeah, I mean, I guess with him it would depend on how he how far along he is from that injury, because I mean, going into the season his game was considered to be pretty complete. He actually wasn't quite as much of a raw prospect as some of the other guys out there.
I guess you're right. I guess you are right. That's a good point. I just
Going into the season, most people had him and Doncic right there.
Very polished, like, offensively. I guess, yeah. I heard so many like scary things after, because I watched, you know, in the beginning of the year, tape on all these guys, not extensively, but I came out of it thinking, man, Porter might be the best guy in this whole class. And then everyone seems to have soured on him, and I'm wondering if everyone's going to kick themselves for passing on him in a couple of years if he does drop.
I think most of it has to do with that back injury. I mean, you know, back injuries are so tough, especially if you're that young. You know, are you really taking a chance on a guy who's got back issues at, you know, 18, 19 years old, when that's something that typically doesn't manifest until like your 30s, you know? The back issues aren't something you really want to mess with.
No.
So maybe that'll scare some people off. And he had to get surgery on it, if I'm not mistaken, too, which
that is correct.
Yeah. Even more troublesome. So.
Yeah. But getting back to the Clippers for a bit, You think, so if they were to trade up, do you think it's realistic that they would give up 12 and 13 for number 9? Because people have brought that up a lot, and I tend to think no. I mean, the way that I could possibly see it is maybe if Trae Young is still around, that to me makes a little bit of sense. Otherwise, and like you said, maybe Michael Porter, but I don't think they're doing it for McCall. I don't think they're doing it for Miles. I think those two are a notch above some of the guys that are available on trade back, but no one really knows this. You know, this is just my conjecture from the small amount of tape and research that I've done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it depends on if there's someone that they really like there. I'm trying to look it up. I just had this thought of, do you remember the year that the Knicks drafted Porzingis? Mm-hmm. Frank Kaminsky got drafted by the Hornets. And there was like a apparently substantiated rumor that the Celtics were like very, very interested in moving up to take Justice Winslow.
Right.
At the pick that Kaminsky got taken at. And that was to move up, like, let me see here.
I'm looking
at so they were at 16, and they wanted to pick at the 9th pick, right? So the same pick the Knicks are at. And they were apparently willing to give up the Nets pick, the 2016 Nets pick, which then turned into Jaylen Brown. So, and they knew at that point that the Nets pick was going to be, like, an asset. So that makes me believe that maybe there's precedent to do something like that, you know, because then you're trading two end of the lotto picks for sure. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts to move up if you feel really strongly about somebody.
For the record, in that year, Devin Booker wound up going 13th in the draft. Just a little, little fun tidbit. Who else besides the Clippers might the Knicks look to trade back with?
So when I'm looking, I see the Suns. They're at 16. I mean, that's probably a little further than you or I or anybody would really want to trade back. But the Suns already have the number 1 pick, obviously. So they're going to pick whoever they want there. If they feel like they can take somebody at 9 that's going to be a difference maker for them, you know, and maybe allow them to have kind of a Celtics-esque revival this year, you know, with a whole ton of young guys kind of finally coalescing, then they might be willing to do something like that. They have no picks outgoing, so they own all their own picks going forward. They also have Miami's first rounder next year, that's this year. Okay, so that's this pick this year. I'm sorry, they have Milwaukee's pick next year. It's protected 1-3 and 17-30 next year, and then 1-7 2020 and unprotected in 2021. So Milwaukee, I don't know if they're trending up or down, because they've kind of just been treading water at the like 6-8 seed for the last however many years.
I guess if you believe in the Budenholzer bump, you could say they're trending up, but it doesn't look like their team's going to get a big shakeup. Now, obviously, if the Knicks traded 9 for 16, which one of these assets do you think might be available to them? Or what do you think would be realistic for them to ask for? Because obviously you're not just trading 9 for 16.
I think what you'd really want to try to get, since the Suns already have that Milwaukee pick, presumably to fall back on next year, you would probably want to try to snake their pick for next year. Take the Suns pick, but let them protect it like 1-3 or 1-5 or something like that.
So quickly, because this was actually a conversation / argument we were having in Slack earlier today, and friend of the show, John Shulman, said, that Phoenix pick might not be so good next year. Where do you stand on that? Do you think they have the possibility of really, obviously they were a complete, just horrific wasteland of a basketball team last year, but do you think with the aid of a top pick that they could make a big leap? Do you think they could make a process-esque leap? Obviously not to, you know, the second round of the playoffs, but like a fringe playoff contender, let's say.
Yeah, well, I think contrary to all this stuff that's coming out recently about how the top three teams aren't going to take Doncic, I think he's going to be a Sun, because his former coach is there, so I think they're going to take Doncic at 1. That's going to give them than, you know, Doncic, Booker, and Josh Jackson. Dragan Bender is still there. TJ Warren. I mean, that's a pretty decent core by itself. And then say they trade up with the Knicks, you know, so then they move out of the range of like potentially Zaire Smith, Lonnie Walker, guys we're going to talk about later, and move up into the range of guys like Mikal Bridges or Miles Bridges or potentially Wendell Carter if he's still there. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like he would be a really, if they take Doncic one, Wendell Carter would be like a home run pick at nine, because that fills a big man need, and I think he's going to be a lot better than his draft stock has him at. So it would just depend, you know what I mean? I feel like like everything, it would just depend on how it all fell down for them, and I feel like you would have to get to the point where the Knicks are on the clock for the Phoenix to make this deal,
right?
And someone like Wendell would still have to be on, you know, on the board there. But if he was, I think that could be something they're interested in.
That's interesting. If that is the case, I don't love that deal for the Knicks. If they're getting 16 this year and then, like, you know, a fringe lottery pick, sort of back end lottery pick next year. But it would be in addition to what is presumably their own top 10 pick next year. So I don't know. I mean, it is an interesting question. As far as Doncic goes, I don't think Phoenix is going to draft him. Why would they lie about it now when they have the first pick? That seems odd to me. They're just trying to screw with people. Although it seems equally bizarre that they would hire the Slovenian national coach and then not draft him. But like, Phoenix is so stupid that maybe that is something they would do. That just seems so insane. And in a post Brian Colangelo world, I do not know what to believe anymore.
Yeah, I think it could. There might legitimately be a little bit of a power struggle in that front office already going into this draft, because, you know, even though they just hired this new coach, forgive me if I butcher his name because I'm not looking at Kokoskov. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Kokoskov.
Yeah.
Kokoskov, isn't that it?
Kokoskov. I'm not saying it
because I'm some jingoist monster who's like, I just don't remember the guy's name. Yeah. It's not because it's foreign and silly. Just so everyone knows, wokest podcast in the game. This is going to make some of my haters angry, but, you know, it's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, either way. So he's definitely going to want Doncic. And then the front office, I mean, it's possible they might really be in love with Ayton because he does sort of fill a team need, and he's a local kid. Like, he played high school in Arizona. He went to college at Arizona, obviously, like, right down the road from them.
Yeah, I think that's a huge mistake, personally. They're going to regret that.
Bigly. Oh, I think so, too. I think they should take Doncic, and I think that he's the pick. But, I mean, if they're, like, really in love with Ayton, then, maybe they do it. But I feel like the coach is going to be, like, 100% telling them to draft Doncic. Like, you draft him, and I'll do my damnedest to get you guys to the playoffs.
Yeah, there's no way he's not. Could you imagine being hot, like, being Doncic's national team coach, getting hired by a team that has the ability to draft him, and then being overruled? Would anything make you feel like less sure about your decision to come over? Although I suppose it is an NBA head coaching job, but man,
yeah,
what a bummer that would be.
It would be a heck of a potential rift. Like, if you hit like midseason and Ayton was struggling and Doncic was thriving somewhere,
which you know then, he's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, and then he just happened to let it slip, like, well, I wanted him, but they didn't, you know, they didn't draft him.
I'll talk about him in another podcast. We'll give him in depth, even though I don't think there's any chance the Knicks grab Doncic. But, I mean, he's just one of these guys. He's the ultimate old man squash player as, like, an NBA player. It doesn't, to me, his athletic concerns, he's not, like, some doofus who has no athleticism, but they're just, like, it just doesn't matter. Like, sometimes when you just know how to play the game, like, he's got enough athleticism. He knows how to use his body. He knows how to, like, work off a screen better than anyone in this draft. He's just got IQ through the roof, I mean, and enough athleticism to back it up where I don't think it'll be a problem at all.
To quote Pusha T on Daytona, when you know, yeah, you know he's going to be good. He's going to be really, really good.
Yeah, for sure. I want to find out if you have any more trade back partners. Do you?
I won't go too in-depth in them because I feel like we already took enough time with some of these guys. But
hold on one sec. Before we do that, Alex, it's crucial that I remind our listeners that they are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network in the entire world. All right. Sorry to cut you off. I just, you know, doing it for
You have important things to tell these people about the most important podcast network in the world, and I understand.
They must have forgot, you know? So I got to remind them once in a while. We don't need to spend too much time on it. Excuse me. But what are one or two other trade back partners quickly?
So just bouncing off the top of my head, Charlotte would maybe give you a modest return to move up two spots if they feel strongly about somebody. Denver and Washington are at 14 and 15. Again, that's really far back, it feels like. But, you know, those are two teams that were fringe. Well, Washington made the playoffs, but Denver was a fringe playoff team. If they feel like someone like McCall is going to, you know, really push them over the edge, they might make that trade.
Of those, the only one that is at all sort of interesting to me would be Charlotte, only because I think that their future pick would probably be the most valuable. And, of course, that depends on protections and all that. But it's probably the least realistic because they're at not 11, you know. I mean,
yeah,
that's tough. It's like
they seem kind of committed to the tank at this point, it seems like.
Yeah. So
like a blow up is coming there sooner than later, maybe on draft day, to be honest. They might be the type that tries to ship out Kemba and whatever and try to just hit the reset button.
That's interesting. I like that. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I don't think it's the most likely scenario. I think it's pretty unlikely that the Knicks would trade back, but it's also not absurd. And it's also a good way for us to kind of talk about some of the prospects beyond Miles and McCall a little bit down the pecking order, who we haven't covered on the podcast yet. So why don't we talk about a couple of potential players who the Knicks would actually target in a trade back scenario this year, a couple of prospects. Why don't we start with... I hope I'm saying this right, because I heard this pronounced a million different ways. How would you pronounce the guy's name who has a hyphen in his last name?
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
That's what I would say. And then I heard someone on a video say Gilgeous, and I was like, huh.
No, I think that guy just was over-pronunciating. I don't think that's for real.
Okay. So Shai Gilgeous-Gorgeous-Alexander... He is 19.8 years old in the parlance of the Stepien. That's how they list these guys, and it cracks me up. He's a freshman out of Kentucky, I believe. And his combine measurements, he did go to the combine, 6'4.5" without shoes, 6'6" with shoes, just under 7 foot wingspan, 6'11.5", 180 pounds with 3% body fat. He was the skinniest guy at the combine, at least by body fat, but probably by weight as well. And he did not do the vertical leap measurements. It's interesting that people opt in and out of like certain aspects of the combine too, but he did not choose to vertically leap like a coward. So we don't know how high he can jump officially. But
well, I can tell you why he did. I can tell you why he didn't do that, because he can't jump, man. He's not a jumper.
Not a leaper, but as we said, he's a guard. He played point guard, and that's excellent. Those are excellent measurements. Good size for a guard, I'll say that. I mean, that's definitely one of his strengths right off the bat. Really great size for the position, nice length. What other things do people say that this young man does well?
Well, let me I just want to gripe one thing. I got to gripe about something real quick.
Let's do it.
Why do they measure these kids without shoes on at the combine? Do people play basketball without shoes on? Because it's incredibly stupid. If a guy could play in platform like 70 shoes on the basketball court and it made him 6 inches taller, he could do that. But nobody can do that.
Is there any kind of official rule about what footwear is allowed?
Like, I don't think so. I mean, you look at the sneakers. Like, Nick Young wore, like, Balenciagas and crap.
When does a shoe become a stilt? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a limit. But honestly, like, I don't know why they measure these kids without shoes on.
It's so odd. I honestly don't know. I tried to look this up. When teams list player heights, which are notoriously, like, you can't trust at all, is it supposedly in shoes or out? Like, is there any sort of methodology? This is what's maddening to me. It's really hard to kind of figure out how tall these guys actually are.
I think so. Chris Herring, former Knicks beat writer, now brilliant writer for ESPN.
Yes.
He did a story when he was still with the Journal, with the Wall Street Journal, about how players fudge their heights.
Yeah.
And things like that. And Durant was one of the biggest abusers of that. He for a long time, so the perception wouldn't be that he was a big.
Yeah.
So that he could stay like perceived as like a small forward. He made a point of making sure that he was always listed as 6'9 or 6'10. And in reality, he's like 7 foot at least.
I thought that was a hilarious, interesting peek into things. I always just assumed that people obviously would lie up in order to seem more appealing. Yeah. But when you're as great as Durant and you're just kind of trying to finesse what position you want to play, I thought that was fascinating.
I feel like initially when these guys go through the combine and stuff, as long as they opt to get measured, you get a for real measurement. But then after that, you can never trust it again because the players basically control it.
Yeah, for sure. But I think when you look at the tape and you look at his measurements, definitely a good size for a point guard.
He's definitely like he's got good length and height. But he's built actually just length and height wise a lot like Frank Ntilikina.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference between the two is when you look at them, Frank clearly, and I mean you can see it from his workout photos this summer, Frank clearly had a frame that was built to fill out. And Shea, you look at him and he's got kind of narrow shoulders. He's just like rail thin, like all over. And he doesn't have that like, he has like that wiry look to him rather than like Frank. Like, I'm not saying Frank wasn't in good shape, but Frank, you could see like kind of like that baby fat about him. You know, like you could see that he's young and he has muscles to grow, whereas Shea was just like wiry muscle.
Yeah, and like Frank to me looks more like a, what I imagine like a 13-year-old David Robinson would look like. Like he looks like an Adonis in the making. Like he just looks like he could become RoboCop, basically.
Yeah.
And Shea just looks like he's gonna be this little wiry punk that drives you crazy that he's decent at basketball. Cause you're like, I could beat this guy up and I don't even play a professional sport.
his build honestly reminds me a lot of Michael Carter Williams, who also has not filled out a bit since he got into the NBA.
Yeah.
Like Carter Williams still looks just as thin as the day he got in. And
a little bit of a kind of a twisted posture too. Not like he's some hunchback or something, but you know what I'm talking about? He's like a little snaky in a way, where almost like this like Tayshaun Princey. It's weird because I brought him up like twice in the past week after not thinking about him for years. But which is not necessarily a bad thing, but I think a good way to kind of pinpoint what kind of body type he has and how he's going to grow into it.
Yeah. But like, all in all, like his game, his calling card is defense. He's kind of like Frank in that regard. I mean, there's like, honestly, there's a lot of similarities you can draw between the two in regards to how they play. Like Shea was really good on defense. He seems to be a pretty good man defender. His shooting percentages were actually pretty decent. He shot 50-40-80, so 50% field goals, 40% from three, albeit on only like one attempt per game, and 80% from the line, which is pretty solid.
Sure.
I
definitely would want more volume on that three before trusting it, but it's obviously a better sign than shooting 30% on one three a game.
And then at times he was he showed the ability to really be a lead guard, but I don't know if his vision is quite where Frank's is.
Mm-hmm.
But he definitely showed potential as a ball handler, particularly in the NCAA tournament. He was just like really clicking there. He seemed to be finding open guys, and he was driving into the paint. And
I mean, he seemed like their best player a lot of the time.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, I mean, he was really, really good during the NCAA tournament and the SEC tournament, for that matter.
Yeah.
I think he had sort of a De'Aaron Fox-esque run, although obviously I don't think he's quite as physically gifted as Fox is.
No. I mean, that's the thing. Like, so you mentioned Frank a couple times, and basically when I was researching him, I decided this is definitely not someone I would want to draft or trade back for, because I just don't feel like he gives the Knicks anything that Frank doesn't already, and it feels like pushing back the entire Knicks timeline for like an inferior version of Frank. I'm not trying to speed things up, but it's like, why bring in this guy who is a little bit less impressive in basically everything that Frank does while not really bringing anything extra? I mean, he's not obviously he's not a terrible athlete. He's going to be drafted in the first round of the NBA draft, but like he just looks a little bit slower than Frank. I mean, I think Frank is a much better athlete with more explosiveness than a lot of people give him credit for. And not that he is, you know, the most explosive guy, but I think he's got a little bit more in the tank than people realize. Maybe not those who watch the Knicks all the time, but, you know, some outside observers. But when I look at Shea, like, he did a good job of kind of getting to the basket a lot in the highlights I saw, but it didn't look like he did anything special to be there, and it might have just been him sort of using a length advantage that he may or may not be able to use if he's not as quick in the NBA. I mean, length is length, and he's got good length, but I don't know. Like, he wasn't really blowing by people, and you mentioned his shot. Maybe it's a fine shot, and people have weird-looking shots, but I think he's one of them. Like, it almost looks... Is it slow? Is it a slow delivery? It almost looks like kind of lackadaisical. I don't know if he's got a quick release.
Yeah, I thought his shot looked a little slow, personally. I mean, it's not like Lonzo Ball levels of, like, weird coming out of college, but there's definitely something that needs to be fixed there. I mean, I'm not, like, a shot doctor by any means, so I'm not, like, the guy to... But I think that it definitely needs some work in some way. And also, like you were mentioning, like, he seemed to be able to get into the paint, but he just wasn't very crafty with the ball when he got in there. You know, it was kind of just, like, close to the vest and then up. You know, it was very basic. Like, it was very, like, high school. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a lot of, like, crafty moves. He wasn't doing reverses so much. There was some times where he would kind of kiss it off the glass nice because of his length. You know, like, he could kind of extend out further than the defender's arm, which is great. But you can't do that as much in the NBA because guys are suddenly longer.
Yeah, like when you're
he doesn't play above the rim at all either. That's the other thing. Yeah. Like this guy, he's really grounded for someone so tall and like seemingly athletic looking. He doesn't get any lift. You know, he's barely putting it up to the square on the hoop.
And sometimes, you know, like you said, you don't need to be as crafty if you're just an outstanding physical specimen in one way or another, whether it's your length or your speed or your height or your hops or whatever it might be. But nothing that he has is so outstanding. It's good. It's plus in terms of length anyway, but it's not so outstanding that I can see him being able to just rock with that without improving his skills. Are there any other... I feel like I've kind of exhausted my, you know, the caveat that all our... Daily listeners know is that not a draft expert, but I have spent time looking into these guys. But I've kind of exhausted my knowledge on Shea, Gilgeous, Gorgeous Alexander. Do you have anything left to add in terms of the strengths or weaknesses?
No, I mean, that's pretty much it. I'd also say his handle probably needs a little bit of work too. Mm-hmm. You know, I got the impression when I was watching him that, and Frank ran into this at times this year too, and I'm sure that he's going to get better because it's already showing in his off-season work. But, you know, I just get the feeling that some of these smaller guards, because when you're a big guard on defense and you can keep up with the smaller guards, it's awesome. But when you're a big guard on offense and your handle needs a little work, it's a disadvantage because you're dribbling the ball so much higher and these little guys can essentially snake right under your arm, you know, to get after this ball. I feel like Shea would probably get eaten alive by some of the smaller defenders in the NBA. Like if someone like Chris Paul went after him or something, I don't think he would know what to do. Like he would have to pass the ball away and just go off to the side for a minute.
Yeah, he would definitely eat him up. So I think we both agree we do not want to draft or trade back for and draft Shea Gilgeous Alexander.
I wouldn't mind doing it maybe if we hit a situation where it was like with the Clippers, if you somehow got both those picks and you want to take one of those two picks, but I certainly would not want him to be the only guy the Knicks walk away with from this draft.
Okay.
Because of the redundancy with Frank and exactly what you said, he's kind of just like a probably worse version of Frank.
I personally would like two of the other candidates we might talk about if they did do some sort of, if two in this draft, which seems unlikely, but I hear what you're saying. I don't think that's like super unreasonable. Who else do you want to talk about? Who should we talk about next?
Let's do, I think, Lonnie Walker. Okay. I think he's a good one to talk about.
Lonnie Best Walker the fourth?
Yeah. Yeah, all these guys are like the fourth or fifth version in their family of the same name somehow.
Oh, man. All right, so I'll give you guys the quick deet. He's a 19.4 years old freshman out of Miami. Combine measurements. 6'3¾ without shoes, 6'4½ with shoes. He's got a 6'10 and one quarter wingspan. He's 196 pounds, 5.65% body fat, and a 40-inch vertical leap. So that's pretty good. Why don't we start off by talking about some of his perceived strengths?
So things that I noticed while watching tape on him, I'll fully admit, as of like a few days ago, I wasn't very familiar with Lonnie Walker. I'd watched him, my only experience with him mostly over this NCAA season was when I watched that first round game that they played against Loyola Chicago, and he like fumbled the ball away on that one possession late off his leg, and that did not leave a very good impression. And they lost that game, obviously, and Loyola Chicago became like everybody's favorite team.
I don't want to spoil the rest of this breakdown, but not exactly out of character for him.
Yeah. So, but good things that I noticed. I think he has good to great body control around the hoop. Like when he gets in tight, he has really, really good body control. He can, you know, start with the ball out, bring it in, you know, scoop it under, do a reverse on the fly, whatever he needs to do to get it up towards the hoop.
Super creative finishes at the rim.
Yeah.
There are some issues around that we might discuss later, but when he's doing it well, you're like, holy shit, that's a Jordan move, you know?
Yeah. I think he has a body, like unlike Shea, where we were talking about, he looks like he's going to be perpetually skinny his whole career. Lonnie already, I think, has a body that's tailor-made for the NBA as a two-guard, and maybe even as a small three, because he's, like you said, he's 6'4", he's got a 6'10 wingspan. I mean, that's in the range of, like, Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is good measurements.
He looks long, too. He's one of these guys who plays a little bit longer than his measurements, I think.
Yep. And so, I was watching some stuff on him, and I tried to watch any of these guys that did the interviews at the Combine with, like, Jay Billis and them. I tried to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
And Jay Billis brought up during their interview that I guess Lonnie was hurt for the first half of the year, which I was not aware of.
Yeah.
Or, like, was dealing with the nagging injury. So once he kind of became healthy and was starting consistently and getting consistent minutes, he averaged, like, 15 points per game over the course of the second half of the season. He shot like 36% from three, so those are promising, and he started to play more like a lead guard than the first half of the season. So it kind of, his averages worked out to something like 11 or 12 points for the whole season, and the shooting percentages weren't that great, but if you just look at it from the sample of when he was apparently healthy towards the end of the year, it was pretty impressive. I mean, it was good, certainly good numbers for a college shooting guard.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so, and something that we kind of touched on with his body control, I think he's just an impressive athlete. The guy can jump. He's got some wild dunks. He's quick. Like you said, he's got good body control. What do you think of his jumper? Any thoughts there?
I think his form is actually really good.
Yeah.
When I was looking at him, he seems like he really gets high up on his jumper. First off, like he jumps high, but he does it quickly. And he releases it kind of above his head, which is obviously ideal. I don't know how he doesn't hit it on his hair, because his hair sticks up about 14 inches from the top of his head. But
I gotta say, one of my takes, which I don't think is unreasonable, but I know it makes me sound like an idiot. I just don't like guys with wild hair. Like, I like them as human beings, but as as athletes, there's a part of me that's like, don't you take this shit seriously? Like, won't you be more comfortable with short hair? I don't know. I know it's stupid. I know it's dumb.
Yeah.
But Who's the great basketball? Who's the best basketball player with a wild hairdo? Like Dr. J, maybe?
With the afro, probably.
And that was during heavy afro period. Like now.
But also the afro was like firm, you know, like that thing was like, you know, an afro is very different than like the like dread nest that, you know, Lonnie Walker or Elfrid Payton or whatever.
I mean, Elfrid Payton like actually hitting the ball sometimes when he shoots is outrageous. I mean, he should be fined every day he has that stupid haircut. Again, as a human being, I'm in favor of you expressing your individuality. As a professional athlete that the team I love might be giving millions of dollars to, I want you maximizing every advantage. Don't be a jerk about it.
Well, and Elfrid Payton cut his hair finally this offseason.
He's going to have a breakout season. Just to kind of round out the jumper talk, though, I did think he had kind of a sweet looking jumper. He had like, I was like, does he maybe have a little bit of a hitch? I couldn't tell, but it looks like he has a pretty quick release. I was watching highlights, and some guys, the ball just sounds good when it goes through the net, and he had a couple of those net snappers. I was like, he's got something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely, his jumper's pretty clean, I think. I honestly, out of all the guys we're talking about today,
yeah,
or you know, on this two-parter, because I think we're doing a two-parter here.
Oh, it's shaping up to be.
but all these guys that we're talking about here, I think he probably is the cleanest looking jumper out of any of them. I mean, he sets his feet quick.
Yeah.
He gets up quick and he releases it, I think, at a really good point. So.
And yet.
Go ahead.
But this kind of is interesting because he does have a nice looking jumper. I think his mechanics are pretty sound. He shot 41% overall, which I don't necessarily think has to do with his jumper. And this is something that's very interesting to me with this prospect in particular and what you think you can do with coaching. But it seems to me, and I don't want to talk out of turn here, but it seems to me like he might have a low basketball IQ problem. It's from what I could tell, from what, you know, reading things that people have written who have followed this more closely, from watching tape of him, it seems like he kind of settles for bad shots a lot. It seems like he makes some bad passes. It seems like we talked about how he has just wildly creative finishes at the rim. And I don't know if he's afraid of contact or just thinks he's really slick, but it seems like he does kind of shy away from contact in favor of some whirling dervish layups, which kind of give me Derrick Rose PTSD flashbacks a little bit. And then on D, he seems to kind of get lost a little sometimes and seems to bite on pump fakes a lot. I'm wondering if he's one of these guys who's such a good athlete that, and like is a little bit, just a little bit like not as serious, and this is why I'm being unfair with his hair, but like, is he as much a basketball player as some of these other guys who may not be as wildly athletic as him? And is that a problem? Is that something that you can kind of coach out of him? I don't know. Do you think that's a fair assessment of a weakness?
Yeah,
of
you
his?
Know, I was actually about to say, like, you sort of, and I mean, I hate to invoke this because of what it means, but I'm going to do it. You sort of get J.R. Smith vibes off him a little bit sometimes.
Interesting,
like,
yeah.
He could be the guy that's out there just to get you some buckets, but don't necessarily count on him to play good defense all the time, and don't necessarily count on him to really be looking for anybody else.
That I like that a lot, because it's one of these guys, when they're on, you're like, this is a Hall of Fame two guard.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, J.R. Smith has put on some performances where you say, God damn, like, how is this guy not?
He's got an all-star. All the ability in the world,
but,
yeah.
But the days that he's not on, you know, he can't make those team first plays to make everybody else better when he's not having a good day. Mm-hmm. So I kind of get those vibes off Lonnie a little bit. And it seems kind of unfair, too, because, you know, when you watch him, he's really composed in interviews. He seems like a smart kid.
Okay.
He seems like he has a pretty good head on his shoulders. That's like when I was watching that, okay. When I was watching that combine interview, he seems pretty good, but he also seems like he could.
Is he the one who said the earth is an illusion?
Yeah, he did say that, but I think that was a joke. Like, taken out of context,
it could be
awful. but it seemed like a joke because they flat out asked him, because he was. They were asking him about like his interests, and he's like, "Well, my grandma always encouraged me to, you know, to be studious and to try to always be learning." So he's like, "So I always watch like Discovery Channel and National Geographic and whatever. Like, I love watching like Planet Earth and stuff."
Mm-hmm.
And all he had to do was say the word Earth, and they go, "Oh, what do you think about the Earth? Is it round or flat? Do you think it's flat like Kyrie Irving?" And then he was like, "No." Nah. He immediately shook it off and was like, "No, nah, I don't think it's flat." But then he goes, "Oh, but my conspiracy theory is that the Earth is just an illusion." And I'm like, so that sounds like a joke to me.
Well, all I'll say is, Alex, maybe you should go on a YouTube rabbit hole. There are a number of highly respected philosophers, at least a handful, who do think that we're living in a probabilistic universe that basically is a simulation. But that's a whole...
Yeah, there's a movie all about that. It's called The Matrix.
Yeah, just because it's in a movie doesn't mean it can't be true. And like I said, in a post-Brian Colangelo universe... anything is possible, but you know, so like we're talking about training back. This is someone I would not want to trade back for, although in a multiple pick situation, I guess it's okay. He just seems like the kind of person to me that just doesn't have that sort of innate basketball sort of feel that's going to make it hard for him to really like reach his potential, yeah. Which is exciting. I'm not going to write the guy off. I don't know nearly enough about him. That wouldn't be fair. But if I'm sort of armchair quarterbacking the Knicks here, I don't love him as a target.
Well, another problem too with him, and it's not anything really against him, but it's the same thing like when we're saying that if you draft Shea, that's redundant with Frank. Mm-hmm. If you draft Lonnie, that's in a way sort of redundant with Tim Hardaway Jr., your guy that you just gave a huge contract to last year. Like, a lot of what he does is similar to what Hardaway does, but I think Hardaway has a higher BBIQ than he does. So it's like, are you going to spend that draft capital on this guy to come in and essentially play the same position as a guy that you have that seemingly is at least a starter level shooting guard?
And this isn't exactly fair and sort of a stupid thing to even bring up, but has any good NBA player come out of Miami? I just like, I don't know. I'd rather draft like the 12th man at Kentucky than
Dude, how dare you disrespect Shane Larkin like that? He's a Knicks great.
Oh man. Do you have any final thoughts on Lonnie Walker?
Just like, you know, similar to Shea, I don't know for sure that I would actually want to trade back specifically for him. But I would certainly, there are players that I would certainly be more mad at the Knicks for taking than him. Let's say that.
If Miles or McCall are on the board, do you trade back for the only pick this year is Lonnie Walker, but you have another pick? I know there's so many variables in that, but
It would depend on how good that other pick has the potential to be. You know, that's my only thing with that, because it would be frustrating if you trade back for Lonnie and it's like, okay, we just traded back, you know, four spots or whatever. It took Lonnie Walker and watched, you know, both the Bridges go off the board, and all we got for it was like two extra second rounders 2 years from now or something like that. Like, that's unacceptable.
Yeah, I'd throw a brick through MSG's corporate offices if that happened.
Yeah, but if you would get another like young player, you know, maybe a second or third year guy on a rookie deal, plus you get a few picks back, trade a few picks back, I should say, or if you get back another future pick or something along those lines. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure they could talk me into it, but yeah. I don't necessarily think I would be over the moon about it.
An interesting prospect in the right situation, could be a decent guy for the Knicks. With both Bridges on the board, I personally would really not want to do that. But, you know, that is just my opinion, man. I think this is going to be it for the first part of Trade Back-a-Palooza. We've got two more prospects that we want to look at in this range for part two. Alex, why don't you let the people know where they can find you online?
So check me out on Twitter at the Alex Wolf, WOLFE with an E at the end. And, you know, I'm trying to write a little more for postingandtoasting.com. So be sure to check them out, because no matter what, even if I'm not writing, whoever's writing is very talented and very good, and you should be reading them.
I second that. And we're not going to beg you for money with a Patreon. Promise.
Oh, God.
That was great, if I do say so myself, if I do say so myself, if I do say so myself. Always a pleasure to have Alex Wolfenstein 3D on the podcast. That's it for today's episode. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. 5 stars, please. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. If you have subscribed to the show, tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. We want more subscribers. Not just your friends. Tell your poetry professor about Locked On Knicks if you're taking a poetry class. They'll like it. Basketball is poetry in motion. After all, it's jazz. You know what I'm saying? Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks or NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other. Spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it melt. If it's brown, flush it right down. Always salt the pasta water. Always, don't forget. And take that, take that, take that. For data. Tune in later this week for the exciting conclusion of Trade Back Palooza. Peace. That's a weird one. Let's do it again. Peace. Peace. Love you guys. Bye.